Welcome to Extra Sequential number 23, I believe, for the third week of January 2011. My name's Martin. I've got Chris here in the Skype studio, virtual online studio here with me. And we're just going to be talking about comics, graphic novels, and whatever other useless stuff we did this week. How you going, Chris?
Good. Yes. Well, I don't think we've got long enough to describe all the useless things we've gotten up to this week, but we'll certainly give it a shot.
Mm.
And well, we are coming at you from Perth in Western Australia, which is very hot at this present time.
Mm-hmm. Extremely hot and quite uncomfortable for me to record in my stupid loft. So, yay.
Damn you, loft.
I know, right? So I reckon come winter time, my energy level will be much higher because I love winter.
I do like winter. You know, I want to wear a scarf like Tom Baker in Doctor Who.
Do you wear scarves at all, Chris?
I've worn a scarf once. I'd like to wear a scarf and a beret at some point in my life. Maybe not together, but I think I'd look good in either one of those. I don't really have a head for a hat.
Yeah, I can't wear hats either. My head's way too big.
Yeah, something we both share. Well, I don't have a big
head. No, you don't have a big head at all. What are
you
talking
about?
But
when I wear baseball caps or whatever, it just looks dodgy, like your uncle trying to dance at a wedding. It just doesn't look right.
You look like a paedophile, possibly.
A paedophile, yes.
Paedophile, yes. Host of A Current Affair, paedophile. Anyway.
Should we get into the news, as you say?
Well, what is your problem, man? What? Fine, here's the noose, or however you meant to say it.
The noose.
The noose.
Better hang ourselves. Star Wars, I know, more than you love talking to me, you love Star Wars.
Yeah, more than I like talking to you, I love the Star Wars prequels. Now, is that a backhanded...
That's a backhand, yes. That is a backhand. That's
yeah.
Star Wars is coming to Blu-ray in September. It's been, the rumour mill has been going high for almost about like 6 months or so now. We knew that there was a big George Lucasfilm announcement coming at the CES, I think it's called, convention, some technology convention recently. So Darth Vader came up on the stage and basically there's a trailer online that, Star Wars is coming to Blu-ray in September of this year. That's pretty much all we know at this stage. Trilogies, both trilogies,
yep,
the original and much loved, and the not so much loved Jar Jar Binks trilogies, are coming out as separate trilogies on Blu-ray, and you can also buy the complete Blu-ray saga, all six films as a 9-disc
spot on,
set.
Sir. Spot on.
Three discs, which contain 30 hours of extras, which would be, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the Star Wars deserves some pretty good extras. So,
yeah, for sure.
I'm curious. I'll definitely buy it.
You chump.
Curiosity. I do like the Star Wars films and I do like the originals. I've got the whole trilogy on DVD at the moment because I love all the making of behind the scenes. I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. Yeah. So September, I'll be there.
I got the, I got the 2006 Star Wars DVDs because the second disc was supposed to have as a bonus feature the original unaltered films. And they were put out in terrible quality, just unwatchable, kind of lower than the Laserdisc quality. They just they didn't even do any kind of remastering on it. It was just like VHS quality kind of to watch on, and it was non-anamorphic widescreen, if you know what I mean. So the picture was smaller than it should have been and all this stuff. So I'm not so keen to give them my money anymore. But of these films, if I could get Empire Strikes Back on its own, I mean, that's the one they altered the least, I think, with the special edition. There's no CG dancing characters. There's no... I don't think they added any comic relief to this one.
Did they do, was Boba Fett in Empire? Did they redub his voice?
They did ruin that. Oh, thanks. Thanks for reminding me. Okay, no, I don't want it.
put Captain Solo in the cargo hold. So
before he had like this creepy voice and I was, put Captain Solo in the carbon hold, or however you say it, yeah. I can't do a New Zealand accent. That was terrible. I've really got to stop trying that, eh?
Well, at least we didn't try a Christian Bale impersonation. Put Captain Solo in the cargo hold. I'm going to get them. I mean, Lucasfilm do some awesome stuff when they want to, technology-wise.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm kind of surprised when you first told me all the different versions of Star Wars that that they haven't upgraded to be in a definitive, awesomeness, like the VHS and Laserdisc transfers is kind of surprising, because Lucasfilm usually put a lot of pride in their technology and their kind of stuff.
That was a reluctant feature. I think there were petitions, there's a website dedicated just to having the original Star Wars film, writing letter campaigns, all this stuff to get them to release the original one in its original format. And there's there's an issue of the original negatives are so worn that... And they've been processed so many times now to upgrade the image that the original film doesn't quite exist in that form anymore. But it's kind of that's only sort of true. So I just suspect in 30 years' time we will see finally an original cut released on whatever format, holographic projection
ocular
display
inputs.
Yeah, possibly direct to your brain.
Like film with Keanu Reeves in it, Johnny
Break.
Mnemonic.
Not Point.
Isn't that like that? Johnny Mnemonic.
Oh, Bill and Ted. No, fine. Johnny Mnemonic. Also, kind of based on a Philip K. Dick novel, from what I heard.
Yes, and wasn't I Will Crush You, Dolph Lundgren, wasn't he in that movie?
He was. He was pretty
kind of
decent in it.
Or something.
He was like this robot priest. Spoilers for a 20-year-old movie. He's like this priest who turns out to be a cyborg robot, and he goes crazy and kills a bunch of people. And it's Dolph Lundgren in like this hobo rags. It's pretty awesome. Oh, he's not a priest. He's like this one of those end of the world kind of guys. You know,
like a prophet.
Yeah, like a street prophet. That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah.
Okay.
And there's a dude who has like this laser. You know how like in kung fu movies, the yakuza guys have like piano wire on like. With two handles so they can garrote people. It's called a garrote. There you go. There's a dude with one which is like lasers of that, so he's cutting dudes in half and stuff.
Oh, okay. Like a little portable lightsaber.
Kind of. It's not a bad movie.
Sliced bread with it and stuff.
Is Ice Cube in that?
Ice Cube. No, he's in Tank Girl, Ice Cube. I think he played one of the kangaroo creatures.
Yeah, oh, God. I'm just looking up Johnny Mnemonic. How do you spell Mnemonic? I can't even say it.
Yes, M-N-E starts with.
Ice-T. I was right. He's in it.
Oh, he is. Okay. I stand corrected.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But he was also in Tank Girl, I believe.
Based off the comic book by...
James Hewlett.
Thank you.
I actually watched a documentary about Jamie Hewlett teaming up with Damon Albarn, the guy from Blur who did The Gorillaz. They did some Chinese opera.
Okay.
On Monkey. Have you heard about that?
On Monkey? No. Journey to the East? Yeah. Oh, Journey to the West. Sorry. Yeah.
Journey to the West. Mm. And it was, pretty interesting. Well, it's an opera. So all the songs are in Chinese. So, I mean, it toured the world toured some places for a couple of years. And, the set design and costumes look awesome. Mm. It was a very interesting documentary. Anyway.
I thought Gorillaz were going to sort of disband now. Anyway, that's not a comic book thing. What are we talking about?
Well, vaguely, because it did Tank Girl. Talking about comic book things, Neil Gaiman is going to appear on The Simpsons.
Will he be appearing as himself? Huh? Will he?
He's appearing as himself, yes. Yeah. It's an upcoming episode entitled The Book Job. I guess like The Bank Job or something rude. But, yeah, it's called The Book Job, but he appears as himself. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how he's going to maybe, Lisa meets him at some kind of literary convention or something. But they've had some interesting guest stars. I think Alan Moore was in it.
He was, and his actual scene was pretty good. He was at a signing for some project, and Milhouse wanted a copy of his Watchmen Babies V for Vacation graphic novel signed.
Yes.
A spin-off sequel by the company that he was, and then he was dissing it in the show. That's... And that was the only funny bit of that episode. The rest is pretty unwatchable from what
did
I recall.
Did Alan Moore actually voice himself?
Yeah, he voiced himself. So nice someone one. There like knows what's going on. But does anyone still watch new episodes of Simpsons? Be honest.
Yeah, like the first 15 years were awesome, and I haven't watched it for like 10 years.
Mm. And how many things can you say the first 15 years were awesome? I mean, even that's an accomplishment,
Yeah, that's right. You can't say that about Three Men and a Baby, Two and a Half Men.
Yeah, poor Ted Danson.
I've never seen the show.
Why do you have to diss Ted Danson all the time? Every week you diss Ted Danson somehow. Anyway.
I actually watched the first episode of Cheers yesterday.
Did you like it?
At work. It was so obvious. It was the first episode. There was like bad camera placement and...
Yeah,
you could just kind of tell that all the characters are setting themselves up with all these big, long, expository speeches, and Shelley Long was in there, just broke up with her fiancé.
I like Shelley Long. I like her more than Kirstie Alley.
She left to start her movie career.
What happened to that? She was in the Brady Bunch movie.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
And Brady Bunch 2, Hollywood Vacation, whatever the hell that was.
Yeah.
I was just discussing it with a friend the other day. Simpsons has had more bad seasons than good now. So you can officially say it's, on average, it's a bad show.
We could make a sporting reference.
What do you mean?
You said The Simpsons has had more bad seasons than it's had good. And I was going to say, just like our local baseball team or whatever.
But either of us like sports?
No, so it's a moot point.
That's a waste of time.
I'm sorry.
How about that 2020 cricket? Come on, the Crows.
Let's talk about Batman.
Oh, is that what we're doing? Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right.
What's made news this week is a series that never came to pass called Gotham High, which is basically reimagining as a cartoon, as an animated series, reimagining Batman and his cast, his rogues gallery, as teenagers in Gotham High School. It's kind of interesting. It's was created as a concept by artist Jeffrey Thomas and writer Celeste Green, and they've put a couple of pictures on their blogs where you can see, you know, Bruce Wayne. He hasn't become Batman yet. Can I read out the pitch?
Please do.
We all go through incredible changes as teenagers, growth spurts, bad skin, a sudden insatiable need to uphold justice and avenge your murdered parents. Well, that is if you're Bruce Wayne. As if being a freshman at Gotham High wasn't tough enough, Bruce's insomnia and technological fascinations are taking their toll. Instead of spending his time studying, he has begun to obsess over an emerging personality trait, Batman. But under the watchful eye of his guardian and steward, Alfred Pennyworth, Bruce is forced to put his intelligence to good use, graduating high school. But given his classmates, can Bruce survive Gotham High?
I don't picture Bruce Wayne going to high school. That seems wrong.
I don't think he ever did, because he was travelling the world and, you know, hanging out with monks and FBI agents and learning to solve crime.
His education was the streets, and his diploma was in violence and chemistry, apparently.
Yes.
He's an amazing chemist. Anyway.
I like the concept artwork. It's got, like, you know, like there's, you know, Joker. Yeah. And they're all kind of in loose school uniforms, and there's the Killer Croc. He's hanging out the Scarecrow upside down. A penguin is getting a wedgie. He looks like his underwear's over his head.
Mm.
Barbara Gordon, redhead Oracle, Batgirl is in there. It looks like Two-Face. And
every character's in it.
Having a debate, a presidential debate. So basically it's Bruce Wayne. Yeah, they're all, you know, a lot more human-looking, I guess. But
besides
it's making no damn sense.
It looks like...
Mr. Freeze is in there.
Looks like the Batman.
Kind of.
I think the villain Batman designs especially. This to me reeks of like Muppet Babies. I just get this terrible vibe from this. It seems very cynical. Okay, like, because we did mention Star Wars. You know how like the first or all the prequels are filled with kids? Because they figured, hey, kids like reading about kids, right? It's like here they've decided we need to get more. Yeah, there's like young Jedi running around. I don't know if you remember the marketing, but when the first film came out, there were always books aimed at like preteens about the young Obi-Wan Kenobi adventures and stuff. And then we were all severely disappointed. But this to me seems like the same thing. Like, we need to get teenagers into Batman again. Teenagers like other teenagers, right? And yeah. And now the Smallville's no longer set in a high school. He can't be on the football team anymore. So now it's Batman's turn.
Well, this is, Smallville's last season is this year. But, yeah, thankfully it won't come to pass because, even though the concept artwork, that's as far as it got. But I don't know. I mean, I was just reading the comments. A lot of people have likened it to X-Men Evolution, which I never saw. But it was basically the X-Men characters in high school. I don't know if you saw any of that, Milan.
That rings a bell. X-Men Evolution. That does ring a bell. I think I'm mixing it up with Wolverine and the X-Men. Oh, no, X-Men
it's
Evolution.
Before that, it's like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I remember there was like, they had the characters like Toad and stuff who were kind of not really used until the first movie came out, and that came out about the
and
same time.
They all wore baggy pants and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Ew, dude. Snicked. Wolverine doesn't say snicked when his claws comes out, do they? No.
He doesn't say it, but yeah. So that's called Gotham High. It's interesting. If you Google it, you'll put some. We'll put the links on our log when this episode goes online. But it's interesting. But yes, you're right. I don't know. I'm curious, but I'm kind of glad because, I mean, Batman deserves to be an Avenger of the night.
What do you mean we're going to put links on our blog when it goes online? Are you saying it's being made?
No, when we put this episode online.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
Yeah, don't worry. Gotham High is not going to be made.
Yeah.
And the Wonder Woman TV series has been cancelled as well. Because originally it was going to air on ABC, I think, but that's kind of owned by Disney and Marvel, so they didn't want to make a show for their rival DC Comics, which is understandable.
I heard they, because David E. Kelly was pitching it to every station and no one wanted it.
Okay.
Female-led kind of action-adventure drama shows can be very risky, apparently.
Except for Alias. Yeah, I guess you've had, like, yeah, Buffy was obviously the high point, but then you've had, like, Dollhouse and...
I'd say Alias is a bigger success than Buffy in terms of general viewership, like, but Buffy's got its, like, yeah, its core cult group who would, like, kill you rather than... anyway. We love you, Buffy
fans. Buffy is an awesome series. I'd be one of my top five TV shows of all time.
Whoa, that's high praise.
Maybe top three. Yeah, I never liked it. And then when I went to uni, I studied at uni, and everyone was into Buffy at that time, even though it had been off the air for like a year or so. Mm-hmm. And then I started watching it. It was just awesome. And it's very much created kind of like a comic, you know, like big rounding arcs, new characters, people die, people get married, people doing bad people doing good. Yeah, I really liked it. And I cried, Aladdin. I cried a few times during Buffy's last season. I don't mind to say that.
What's
I cried
new?
When Spock died in Star Trek 2.
Yeah. You cried after that terrible meal we had a few weeks ago, I remember. You looked close to tears, actually.
unrelated emotional issue.
I picture you as a fan of The New Adventures of Lois and Clark.
I've actually got a script of the pilot episode of
How
that.
How did I know? I just knew it, man. I knew it.
I wouldn't say I was a huge fan, because that came out when I was just getting into comics, so I didn't know how real it was, but mm-hmm. You know, it was good the first season, and then after that it just became, you know,
I liked the guy they had.
It's 90210.
Yeah, I liked the guy they had playing Lex Luthor in that. He had, like, he didn't go bald until really late, but he looked like a sleazy kind of business dude, and I thought that's cool. He was good. Yeah. Praise to that guy.
Yes, whoever your name is. Judge Dredd,
was that his name?
Carl Urban, Carl Urban is starring in the Judge Dredd film.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we've only seen one picture release so far. And Lena Headey, one of your, you know, I
one
guess
of
you,
my faves. She's
you have
a crush.
Poster of her in your bedroom loft or whatever.
Well, yeah, maybe. Maybe I do. She,
from the Terminator, Sarah Chronicles.
Good enough.
And 300.
And 300, yeah. I feel like she's in something else, but I can't remember. She has a love scene in 300, and when I first saw 300, I saw it with my parents, and that was awkward.
Oh, yes.
Because there's a sex scene, which is a little bit graphic, and that's always a little bit uncomfortable. Do you watch movies with your parents, Chris?
I do, and yeah, I know what you mean, but, you know, you just kind of stay silent and hope that the new bits get over with quickly. That's generally how I like to live my life.
Mm. Sorry.
I'm going to start crying again.
I know.
Anyway, Lena Headey is playing a villain. That's all we know in the Judge Dredd film. Talking about girls, as I know we like to do, Dark Knight Rises.
See, this is a terrible segue. We should have mentioned it when we were talking about Batman or when we were talking about casting. See, we're all over the place, Chris.
Well, you know, Lena Headey's a girl, and we're talking about girls. So it's the same theme. Of
Judge
feminine.
Dredd is a man. And this is also... No, okay.
Where do you get your information?
okay, fine. What was the news here? Oh, okay. The Dark Knight Rises. Yeah, terrible name. There's all sorts of little casting things going
around. It might
change
the name. It's not definitely it.
Okay. I think it'll have Dark Knight in there somewhere. I thought that was like the one thing they confirmed and everything else is up in the air. But speaking of everything else being up in the air, there's casting things going around now. They're looking to cast their female leads, and the buzz is they're casting Talia al Ghul. Now, for those of you who don't know, Talia is the daughter of Ra's al Ghul, or mispronounced as Ra's al Ghul, played by Liam Neeson and Ken Watanabe in...
That was a bad decision, but yes, in Batman Begins.
He was more like a... Henry Ducard kind of guy in that, wasn't
Liam Neeson was, yeah. He's a character from the comics.
And then the twist is... Then there's the twist that he's not who he says he is. But as soon as you see he has that little goatee, you're like, oh, okay, he's that guy. But, Batman Begins... no one seems to remember he was in that. So if they do put Talia in this film, they're going to have to do a bit of legwork to try and make people remember, because everyone will be like, yeah, I don't remember that first one. There was the Scarecrow dude. But no one remembers the stupid plot to terror, to what was it, to wipe out Gotham and start the world anew or something.
Gotham is a disease city and deserves to die. Yeah. So he wanted to wipe Gotham off because it was corrupt.
Was that your Christian Bale?
That's why Ken Watanabe. A large Ken Watanabe to go, thanks. I don't know. I mean, she's an interesting character and seems more likely, like you said, than Catwoman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As
a female lead.
Definitely, Catwoman does not seem like in the Christopher Nolan territory at all.
And this will probably be the last. Well, I think both Nolan and Bale have confirmed that this Batman 3, The Dark Knight Rises, is going to be the last for both of them. So
Then they'll recast Val Kilmer and continue. What's Joel Schumacher doing these days?
Oh boy, I don't know. Probably trimming his ponytail.
Of course. But yeah, if they do wrap this up as the last one, it makes sense that they try and connect it back to the first one and then try and pull like a Pirates of the Caribbean and go, no, it was intended as a trilogy, when in fact it wasn't intended as a trilogy. But yeah. What's his face? Tom Hardy is in this one as well. And the what's his face is appropriate because suddenly everyone's like, wow, Tom Hardy, he's a big star. Like, we were talking about this earlier today. I'm like, he's not a big star. No one had heard of Tom Hardy before Inception, except maybe Star Trek Nemesis fans, which is like 10 people.
He's been in a film, I think it was in Bronson, where he plays like a real-life British guy.
Okay, no, that one I've heard is good.
But yeah, that was more like an arty indie film. But yeah, you're right, he's not a superstar at this stage.
Yeah, he's more of an acclaimed good actor.
Thespian.
Is he?
He's a thespian, Maladin. A thespian.
Is he?
Say it with me. Thespian.
News. Anyway.
You know what a thespian is.
I do know what a thespian is. What do you think I am? Some kind of layman?
You're questioning me.
Some kind of Luddite or Luddite?
I was saying he's a midget or something. You're like, what? How could it be a thespian?
Yeah, I was just thinking, is he a thespian or is he just British? So everyone assumes British people are thespians. Famous thespian Liz Hurley is the star in
Yes. Well, if he becomes a sir in 20 years, then he's definitely a thespian.
Hey, I think we've gone like 22 minutes about talking about a single comic.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
This makes us the worst comic book podcast on the internet.
We talked about Neil Gaiman. We talked about Gotham High. We talked about Dark Knight Rises, Judge Dredd.
Movies, TV show.
Yeah, well, but they couldn't happen without comics.
Yeah.
Comics is the butter on that bread, baby.
Don't pat yourself on the back there, mister. Don't be so proud of your little medium of...
Well, if I waited for you to pat me on the back, I'd still be crying.
Do you want to talk about what you've been reading? What are we doing?
I do.
Okay, let me get a drink or something. As a statistician, I'm not too sure of that.
Well, if you take a survey of one, then that's 100%.
That's true. Yeah, you can make statistics say anything you want, can't they?
40% of people believe that.
Is that a Simpsons thing? Yeah.
It is.
See, they're still relevant. Like a show they put out 15 years ago is still being quoted.
It's from the good 10 years.
I thought you were going to say which exact episode it was from, and I would have been really impressed.
No.
It was 40% of all people believe that. I think it was... No, I don't know which one it was.
It was Homer telling Lisa.
Yeah, Homer was saying... I think he was talking to Kent Brockman. He was talking to Kent Brockman about something.
Yeah.
No, it was the one where they formed their little group of militia to guard the museum from the thief played by Sam Neill of Jurassic Park and the piano.
Oh, was that Sam Neill? Okay.
Yeah. I think he's in the piano. Is that the one where he
with Harvey Keitel.
Harvey Keitel, yeah. Is that one of the films where you see Harvey Keitel's butt?
Oh, let me think of all the times I've seen it.
There was that time at the train station. I was waiting in line at the subway.
That was the time at the behind the Academy Awards after the rap party that I went to,
Yes. We're both often invited. Podcast hosts are usually invited to Academy Award rap parties, just so people listening in know.
So, are we recording? I had no idea.
Yeah, I've been recording. Oh, sorry. Yeah,
well, that's quite all right.
But I've got you all natural now. So, like, this was Chris unguarded. This is the real Chris coming out, which is basically the same as every other Chris. Hey, Chris, yep. Have you read a comic?
Unplugged. Yes, I have read. Well, I haven't read a lot this week, I'll be honest with you. I have one that I have read is Steel. Steel is a favourite of mine. He is the African-American character that replaced Superman when Superman died.
Based on the Shaquille O'Neal film?
Yeah, that's a bad movie. Try and avoid that if you can. But yes, the Shaquille O'Neal did play him because I think he's a fan of the character. And Shaquille O'Neal also has Shaquille. A Superman tattoo, much like myself.
You said Shaquille.
Did I?
Yeah. I don't know why I find that funny. See, why can't DC come up with their own ideas? They have to steal from a terrible movie. Did they make...
Well, no, the movie is based on the comic.
I know. I'm just trying to make you defensive. So,
yes.
How was Steel? Did it live up to Shaquille O'Neal's winner performance?
Steel number one is a one-shot from DC Comics that's written by Steve Lyons, whose name I'm not familiar with, and with art by Ed Benes. But it's interesting. This actually gained a lot of notoriety, I guess, would be that's the right word when Steve Lyons did an interview on, I think it was Comic Book Resources a couple of weeks ago, and is quite candid, basically saying that he wrote the issue and then he had to start again from scratch because DC came and said, oh, hang on, no, we changed our ideas, so you have to change all that because we want to launch a new multi-part epic called Reign of Doomsday. So he had to start his whole script from scratch. So originally he was actually going to fight Metallo. So Steel, who's this, as I said, guy with a big hammer, he's kind of an African-American version of Tony Stark.
So he's like Thor, though. Does he have a big hammer like Thor, or is it a different...
Yes, he does have a big hammer, and he has a red cape like Thor, but he's also a technological genius and has a suit of armor.
So he's like
which is all grey.
So he's like a blaxploitation Thor.
Thorman. Yeah, so he was originally going to fight Metallo, who's the guy with a kryptonite heart, Superman enemy, that can combine all technology into himself and become big and stuff. So that would have been an interesting pitch.
Based on the Grant Morrison comic? No, I'm going to stop doing this. I'm just trying to mess you up.
No, not Flex Metallo.
I know.
Yes, but I see we're doing it. So, yeah, basically, I mean, the comic, it's not that great. Steel is one of my favourite characters because, I mean, when I first started to get into comics was the death of Superman, 92, 93. And we had Superboy, we had Steel, and we had, you know, the four different Superman replacement. Steel was one of those, and he's still around, thankfully. But basically, all he does is he just fights Doomsday in this issue, for, you know, 20-odd pages. And it's not that great. His niece shows up, Natasha, I think her name is, and she's quite a good character in her own right. She replaced her uncle while he was off sick or injured for a while, so she had her own suit of armor. But here she just appears and doesn't really do much except... helps get pedestrians out of the way while Doomsday and Steel are fighting.
Oh, that's
but
nice.
Yeah, so this is the first part of the Reign of Doomsday serial where the big hulking Doomsday monster is going to fight a whole bunch of different superheroes across the DC universe, I suppose. But I don't know. I mean, I wish there was more of his niece Natasha in there. I wish there was a bit more of his kind of backstory and stuff. It's basically just a slugfest for a few pages. Yeah, it's unfortunate. But Steel is a really good character. I just wish they'd do more with him.
I can't picture him. I just think of Jax from Mortal Kombat.
Jax from Mortal Kombat. Is that Dexter and Jax?
Jax was like the police officer dude with the bionic arms.
See, I was always more of a Street Fighter rather than a Mortal Kombat guy.
Yeah, so you preferred good gameplay over, like...
Dismemberment, correct. But okay. You don't like your films to be bloody and stuff, do you? You don't like those kind of movies?
This was about the same time I was into Beavis and Butthead, so you can't take me that seriously, okay?
You thought Booger jokes were funny?
I'd like to rewatch Beavis and Butthead to see if it's like a biting satire. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, to see if, this is like, if you watch it. You know how like kids watch South Park and they only take away the... oh my God, they killed Kenny, and not like the satirical kind of stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm wondering if it's like that, because King of the Hill's like that. It's by the same dude. But Steel is in neither of those shows, so no one go out looking for Shaquille O'Neal to... Shaquille O'Neal might actually appear in King of the Hill, I should check.
Oh, who knows? I think he had his own reality TV show for a while.
What was it called?
I don't know, shacking it with the Shack. I don't know. It was basically just him and his family.
I guess there'd be lots of Qs in the title, so anytime there's a K, it would be a Q. What could it be? Like give us some queen. Time, people. If you have an idea, email it in to chris@comicbookjesus.com. Awesome. What else have you been reading?
I have been reading a new series. This actually came out, I've got the trade paperback, which is a collection of the first six issues of a Zombies in the Wild West series called Rotten, R-O-T-T-E-N, Rotten. This is Volume 1 reactivated. As I said, it came out in like July of last year, but I've only just got my hands in here because sometimes we get things a bit slower in Australia.
Mm.
So I'm about halfway through the trade, which is the first six issues. So, about three issues in. It's pretty good. It's written by Mark Rayner and Robert Horton with art by Dan Doherty. And basically what happens is there's this Wild Westy kind of town. It's set in 1877, so a few years after the Civil War in America.
Okay.
Not the one where Captain America and Iron Man were fighting, but the actual real Civil War.
I've not heard of that.
there's a silver mine, and they're basically these miners unleash some kind of gas or something, so the zombies kind of come.
There's zombies so everywhere.
It's a like that?
Gosh darn it.
What have I told you about talking like an 18th century prospector?
Gosh darn it.
Yeah.
That's no Simpsons reference.
Yes, it is.
So they never call them zombies, or they haven't yet, and there's no definitive answer as to their origin yet. But, yeah, it's pretty interesting. And then there's this guy, Jones, who's basically on his way through the zombie-infested town, and then he ends up losing his horse, so he has no way to get out. And there's the whole town is kind of run by this guy called Mr. Blankenship, I think his name is. He's basically like a bit of a old rich guy who forces all these people to keep working on the mine in spite of the danger. So all these people are like ex-miners and stuff, and then when it gets bitten, obviously a turn, so they're kind of forced to shoot their friends in the head and whatever, because that's how you kill them. And then this Jones guy turns, he becomes friends with a young widower, and then he busts his old mate out of jail, and then we discover this guy's actually a government agent, and he's been reactivated. He's mm-hmm. been brought back into active duty after being retired for a few years. Him and his partner that he busted out of jail are basically the two men set by the president to get to the bottom of this zombie plague in this little town. It's just here, so it's a good little premise. I mean, I know when we hear zombies in comics, we kind of roll our eyes.
A little bit.
But it's actually quite smartly written, and you can see there's kind of a bigger story at play. Like, you think, how much mileage can they get out of this? But as I said, this collects the first six issues. I think it's up to number eight at the moment. Mm-hmm. So it's obviously got a fair few legs on it. The art's somewhat disappointing. It's very simple. There's a lot of use of blacks and shadows. It's not to the point of cartoony. It's by Dan Doherty, but, you know, it's pretty violent and bloody when I guess it needs to be. It kind of moves at a cracking pace. It's very earthy, like the colouring is quite good. It's a very earthy kind of tone book. There's a fair bit of profanity and stuff. Everyone hates each other, but it's good. Everybody, you know, they look different enough from one another, and you could almost see it as a movie. Like, it's got some good drama interspersed with some pretty creative action scenes. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see where it goes from here, because it's, despite my initial hesitation on the simple setup, zombies in the Wild West, mm-hmm. it actually looks like, Mark Rayner and Robert Horton have actually thought about it a fair bit, as in where the future of the series and where it goes from here. I should point out, Mark Rayner is actually the pop culture writer for the Seattle Times, and he's actually interviewed Harve Benner, who's the writer and producer of the first few of the Star Trek films. So he actually, the writer of Rotten, Mark Rayner, actually appears on the Star Trek DVDs that came out a couple of years ago, interviewing Harve Benner, because he's the pop culture writer, so it's pretty interesting. So, it's published by Moonstone. It's called Rotten, and the trade paperback is out now.
Cool beans.
Over to you.
Thanks, sir. This week I didn't read too many comics, but a comic series I did finally dig into over the Christmas break was Alan Moore and Steve Bissett's run on Swamp Thing from 84.
So Ralph Baez found in the swamps.
Yeah. Is that a swear word? Anyway, 84 through to... Oh, that's Mung, sorry.
Invaze.
Yeah, 84 through to 87 is when they did it, and it was a bit of groundbreaking work at the time, kind of led to the... Well, it definitely led to the formation of Vertigo, which is probably now seeing its death throes, if I'm being honest. But, it's been really interesting to dig into a comic that's one... a lot of Alan Moore's work is always kind of assessed in terms of, I read... kind of, it's been a huge influence on these writers and these writers and these writers, and groundbreaking work, all this stuff. So you go in with pretty high expectations. And Swamp Thing was one I put off for ages because I was like, well, meh, I probably won't enjoy it. And I've probably enjoyed it more than a lot of his work. It's probably one of my favorites of his work.
So this would have been Alan Moore's first series on Swamp Thing when he first started, would it?
I was just look. He did work with some English publishers, but this was
was his first Swamp Thing issues.
So this is also his first Swamp Thing that I've been reading. Sorry,
the issues that you're referring to are the first issues of Swamp Thing written by Alan Moore.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Carry on.
Yeah, that's right. Swamp Thing was created by, I think, Bernie Wrightson before, and then was revived in the 80s, and it was one of his first American comics and his first experience with American publishers, I guess, mainstream ones anyway. And it's great. If you're at all a fan of Hellblazer or any of any Vertigo series, you can see where they get their roots, especially Sandman. I think fans of Sandman will really dig this. The character himself, he's this kind of supernatural, elemental god. This guy who dies and part of his personality is kind of transplanted and merged with this kind of like a swamp spirit kind of thing. And he's a big green dude, kind of a striking profile. And there's a woman who like he sort of loves, like from his memories, and who loves him. And there's like the barrier that he's obviously a big giant green swamp monster, and he can't change back. He's stuck that way. And I'm consistently surprised with he's basically an invincible character. Like, either you can kill him, but he can come back. So I was like, well, how are they going to make this interesting? And they do, and they make it compelling, and you worry about characters and so forth. Because, like Neil Gaiman, he builds that external world of supporting characters so much that you worry about them. And I think there's a cameo from Neil Gaiman in here. There's a character who looks just like him, with sunnies and stuff. But there's one of my favorite scenes so far has been illustrated by Steve Bissette, who was the artist on most of the run. It's their first love scene. They work out a way to kind of consummate their love and passion. And it's this kind of abstract psychedelic journey because she eats this fruit that came off his body. And they kind of go into this trippy world, and you have to turn the pages around, and then there's these double page spreads and with these abstract images of mosquitoes and eggs and things. Really awesome stuff. Very striking. And, like, yeah, I'd say it's the best sex scene in a comic I've ever read, which isn't saying much, but there you go.
You've read numerous.
Yeah. A great storyline in here, I think, because he has, like, kind of demons, zombies. The great one is with vampires. In a previous volume, I've been reading volume 2 and 3 of the new collected editions through Vertigo, like the new hardcovers, which are, I should mention, they're quite good collections. They've got little articles at the front by Alan Moore, Steve Bissette, sort of talking about the individual issues. And, you know, I like those little discussions of particular editorial problems and so forth. But what happens to get rid of a town? You know how vampires can't cross running water?
Really?
Oh, you're not a vampire purist, I see.
I knew they can't come into a house unless they're invited. But
yeah, it's that same rule. One of those rules that they kind of stripped with new iterations of vampires.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why Dracula had to buy a house and rent a ship to cross over to London. He couldn't just swim over. Yeah. But I was going to say, like, he breaks a dam to flood the town, like, with running water, which kills all the vampires, except the ones which are locked in a supermarket. And then when the water stops running, they turn into aquatic mermaid vampires, and they lay eggs, and all hell breaks loose. So it's this weird kind of fish thing, vampire, like Alan Moore's imagination gone wild, crazy stuff. He blends female monthly imagery with werewolves, which I thought was genius because they turn at the full moon. I'm like, one's ever thought to do that.
Ginger Snaps did that. I don't know if you ever saw those.
No.
But it's a film trilogy called Ginger Snaps. These teenage girls turn into werewolves.
Upon their maturity, I get you.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
if they didn't connect it to that, I'd be disappointed. But in the pages, you also see the first Alan Moore created the John Constantine Hellblazer character as well, and yep. he's introduced in these pages as well, and he becomes sort of like this magician guide to him. And he was kind of different at his onset. He was still a bit of a snarky kind of know-it-all guy, but yeah, you can see that he's designed off of Sting.
Sting, yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of miss that look. They've changed him. He's more scruffy. He looks more like Jamie Oliver now. Do you know what I mean?
Jumblies or whatever he says. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Get that into you or whatever he says. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just mix it up. Some olive oil. Yeah. I don't know who does the current. I don't know if he still does the covers, but he was doing the covers during, I think, prior to Andy Diggle run. I think the Mike Carey run. He was doing the Hellblazer covers, and he drew him. To me, he looked exactly like. Jamie Oliver. Yeah, kind of. Okay. So I'd imagine they would kind of blur in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey.
Then if John Constantine can cook.
Can he cook?
Yeah, probably. He's got, abilities.
Does he need to cook, or does he just mooch off of his friends? I'd imagine he's that sort of guy. Batman can cook. Possibly. He can cook a steak. I remember reading a comic where Batman explained how to cook the perfect steak, and then, he's got other things on his mind, and then he cuts it open and he goes, still bloody, and now ruined, and it's kind
of
like...
Is this from the 60s?
I can't do anything right. No, it was a recent one. I think it was...
Okay.
Yeah, it was kind of, I think it was meant to mirror his inner angst or something.
I remember one in the 90s when, after he got his back broken, or he came back, I think, after he got his back broken. This is in the late 90s, and Alfred was so outraged that he... throw himself to virtual death after keep fighting after such an injury that he left and went to London. So Bruce was left to do all the household chores himself. And there's a scene where he's like doing the laundry and he has to know how to use the washing machine and stuff.
Oh, he's like Richie Rich.
Yeah. Macaulay Culkin. That's quite humorous.
Yeah. Shaquille O'Neal and Macaulay Culkin in Richie Rich. No. hey, just because I mentioned Alan Moore now, do you want to briefly mention the kind of debacle that's been going on?
Briefly, yeah, sure, why not? Yeah. Jason Aaron, who's the writer of Scout, who I know you like, from Vertigo, Indian Reservation kind of crime drama stuff. He also writes Ghost Rider and Wolverine for Marvel.
Yep.
He has a ongoing column at comicbookresources.com where he talks about his life, how he... started working at a porn warehouse before he was a writer. And
Ins and outs of the comic publishing world. And
it's quite honest. And, yeah, it's if you're a writer, it's
definitely worth informative stuff. And last week, or first week of January, I should say, he put out this article basically telling Alan Moore to go F himself in response to an interview Alan Moore did 4 months ago. Where he took a quote out of Alan Moore, for anyone who doesn't know, has had a very up and down history. I mean, after Swamp Thing and Watchmen, more so Watchmen, he was kind of screwed by DC on his ownership rights on the series to the point where he now just wants nothing to do with it, which is why you won't see his name anywhere on any of the adaptations of Watchmen in any form. In the film, it just says based on this novel by Dave Gibbons and the colorist and the inker, they put their names as well. It's like, well, okay. Just to make it seem more legit. And but Alan Moore was interviewed about how he feels about the comic book industry today. And they were saying, well, how would you feel? They're talking about getting their top flight talent to do a sequel to Watchmen. And he said, well, first of all, probably jokingly, first of all, I don't think there is any top flight or even middle flight talent in the comics industry today. And then he went into kind of more detail on how, if they did have top flight talent, why don't they let them write a new story instead of capitalizing on this? And what Jason Aaron did is he didn't quite take it out of context, but he did take that to mean, I think he probably doesn't feel bitter about the comic industry, and he's more protective of it and his friends working in it, to the point where it's almost like you're either in the union or you're out of the union, and they kind of all hate each other. And
It's interesting reading the comments. Most of the professionals seems to be on Jason Aaron's side.
Yeah.
But some were like, they get so defensive, man. But some people saying, well, Alan Moore, he hasn't done anything good in decades, He's just a weird old guy that lives in a castle and has a beard. But Alan Moore even admitted that he doesn't read a lot of comics unless they're by his friends or family.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that he'd have that judgment because And one of the things you're saying, and that is right, is that, you know, the comic industry, I guess much like Hollywood, recycles and revisits a lot of stuff because comic fans are so nostalgic.
Yeah.
And he's saying, you know, why don't people, instead of visiting, you know, ideas, the same ideas, why doesn't someone else just create a new Watchmen or a new idea of that stature? And he didn't believe that. But, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people said, you know, like Grant Morrison is just doing awesome work. You know, you look at All-Star Superman or We Three or, Jason Aaron's work. I mean, there's such a wealth.
Yeah,
but unfortunately, Alan Moore is not a regular reader of comics, by the sounds of it. But so he's wrong in that regard. But I understand why he'd be bitter for sure.
I do think that environment is crippling towards. It does rein in certain writers, less so on Vertigo, even though a lot of their books get cancelled and they are getting really crummy deals right now. I don't know if you heard about this, but instead of paying writers directly for their work in Vertigo for each issue to issue, they're subtracting any, because normally their single issues don't sell too well at Vertigo, trades sell better, so they're kind of forcing them to pay back from the profit that they would normally get from the graphic novel, they're paying back the loss on the single issues, so writers are getting. Bills is more like getting, it's almost like how the recording industry works. You pay for your studio time, similar sort of thing. You pay back the cost of producing the album before you see any profit. And they're counting the cost of producing the album as part of the cost of publishing the initial issues, if that makes sense. Which is one of the worst deals of any publisher right now.
Yeah.
Even indie publishers aren't doing that.
No.
And it's pretty scummy. So in context of this whole, and also, you know, it is true that you could say, like, the mainstream publishers are kind of limiting writers to what they can produce and expect to earn a living from it. There's more editorial control. There's not as much freedom as there was in the 80s to produce something like Watchmen or V for Vendetta or whatever. But I guess, like, other writers are working outside of that system. Warren Ellis is not quite,
Yeah, that's true. He's doing a lot of work with Avatar.
Yeah,
But even like Image, you know, we're just doing some great stuff, or Top Shelf or Fantagraphics, you know. Yeah. I mean, Marvel and DC still do some good stuff, but you're right in that the risks are greater, especially now Marvel and DC have such, you know, millions of dollars in their movie making. So,
I do think they're fairly creatively bankrupt in almost all of their output right now in the mainstream, like their superhero stuff, if I'm being fully honest.
Yeah, and I know you don't. Right. And the big ideas that get mainstream usually come from the independent publishers, like Image.
Sure.
I mean, we've seen just the last 6 months, we've seen Image, you know, or Walking Dead. It's got to be a perfect example, you know.
Yeah.
Zombie, just, you know, the highest rating cable TV show ever. Another Image comic. So there are big ideas in there. It's just unfortunate, I guess, Alan Moore's not as open to them as perhaps he could be. And Jason Aaron's understandably hurt because Alan Moore is his hero and he's saying, you know, I've got everything Alan Moore read. You know, I love his work, but I'm just not going to listen to what he has to say anymore.
Well, he also said he's not going to read any more of his comics, which I thought, now you're taking it a bit. You can hopefully divorce the guy's... But he took it as a personal attack, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, so, I kind of understand that if you're a writer, you invest so much of yourself into that, and that's like, I guess, why actors don't watch themselves or read reviews or whatever, because it would be hard to distance yourself.
Yeah.
And Jason Aaron's still relatively new, despite his success, he's still relatively new to the big mainstream success he's been getting.
Yeah. Well, you're right, absolutely. A lot of the comments on this blog were like, well, who are you? Like, I've never even heard of you before now, which isn't a fair... Like, you don't only get the right to speak if everyone's heard of you, if that makes sense. But
well, he is a good writer, but I guess I'm saying is that he's still probably in that new stage where he's excited to see his name on comics.
Yeah.
So he's still hurt if people don't like his comics, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do think he might be better served just doing his own thing and not just writing. He seems most of his time now is on writing, like, Ghost Rider and Wolverine and stuff. And,
yeah.
It almost seems now like people are commenting, oh, it does seem like he used Scalped and The Other Side as a springboard into just writing generic superhero comics. Not that his comics are generic, they're apparently quite good, but just to end up in that field among, like, a drop in the ocean of talented talented writers, let's be honest, working in conditions which aren't maybe the best to get their personal vision out or to leave a strong... or legacy of their work, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, who 20 years from now, no one's going to remember his run on a particular Ghost Rider comic or something. You know what I mean? It won't have the same impact. But sorry, got a bit sidetracked there. What else have you been reading?
That's all I've been reading, but I have been watching. I watched the Unstoppable, the train movie for the cinema.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad, actually. It's directed by Tony Scott.
That's not a train. It's a 500-pound missile.
Yeah, the trailer makes it seem more action-y than it kind of is. It's actually quite down-to-earth and quite real. I mean, there's you know, convenient, like a guy just turns up at the control tower who's like an expert on everything. And, you know, obviously Denzel Washington and Chris Pine, you know, they both have family problems and, you know, so there's that emotional, you know. Hmm. But, I mean, it never feels like it's abusing you as an audience member. But, yeah, I mean, it's not a bad guy either. It's just bad luck.
Bad train. So it's like, guy. It's like Under Siege 2, but without criminals. It's a runaway train.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I did
watch The Other Guys.
Oh, yeah?
With Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg. Watched that last night. It's surprisingly funny, the first half at least anyway, so I recommend giving that a watch.
I like what's it, The Rock and Samuel Jackson as like the two badass cops. I thought, I've not seen the film, but like I'm like, oh, that's good casting at least.
And yeah, they're pretty good in it.
I do like The Rock in comedy.
Not in it for long, but they do a good job.
Do they die in a hilarious way?
I would say yes, they do.
So yes, they do.
Yes.
Okay. Like, what do you mean? I would say.
Well, I was trying to be like spoiler free, but I was like, oh, it's too late.
Dude, who's going
to
see the others? Oh, never mind. It's not like people get really uptight about spoilers about say any film to the point where they don't want to know anything about it. I remember when Inception was coming out. And it's if you mentioned, Leonardo DiCaprio's character, go, shut up! I don't want to know that Leonardo DiCaprio has a character in the film. Like, just being silly about it. Like, you can go into a film knowing that...
What? They speak English? Yeah, what?
Exactly. You can go in knowing that... you can expect, as soon as you see Samuel Jackson and The Rock...
And you know it's called The Other Guys, and you know they're not the big stars, you know something has to happen.
They're either going to have a very funny death scene, or they're going to have just be written out in another funny way. So come on, people, be more savvy.
Yeah.
Hey, instead of reading comics... Savvy? What?
What? I said savvy it is.
Savvy it is. Okay, it's a savvy film. Instead of reading comics this week, I played The Force Unleashed. God, we're all over the place. I should have mentioned this when we talked about Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Are you saying, why did I play it?
Because
I was curious.
Did I tell you how bad it was?
Yes, but
you didn't listen to me.
It was like $4 secondhand. I'm like, I'd be a fool not to buy this for $4.
Correct. And, are you still a fool?
It wasn't...
It's worth $4, I'll give you that.
Yeah, it was a little diversion, I guess, but, I grew up playing Dark Forces and the original Jedi Knight Dark Forces 2, back in the day of very early kind of Duke Nukem era shooters, and I loved the Jedi Knight 2 sequel, which has some of the best lightsaber fighting action, you know, in a game I've ever played. And then this is like three steps back. It's just button mashing. I'm like,
And this is the first one you're talking about?
Oh, sorry, Force Unleashed. Yeah, I've not played the second one.
Okay,
is there a second one?
It just came out. It's not much better.
It's so linear. It's every map is just basically corridor, 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 slightly larger space and a boss.
Stormtroopers.
And it's always the same bosses, and I hate those quick time button effects.
And the big boss ends take forever, just when you think you're about to kill a big monster, and then there's another, and then you have to chop off this hand, and then you have to stab him in the eye. And then
It's very God of War to kind of give you this boss, and you fight them for ages, and then you think, oh, that was hard, I'm glad I have to do that again. And then you walk down a bit, and then there's three of the same boss, and you're like, snap. Yeah. And there's a bit of that in this, but it's just repetitive. The lightsaber fights are no fun because there's basically only like one lightsaber combo, and it doesn't matter what angle you really come at them from; it's the same result in the end. Did you play Jedi Knight?
I did not.
They're the ones set after the original trilogy, so they're based on.
I played Shadow of the Empire on Nintendo 64 back in the day.
Oh yeah, I remember that one. Yeah,
maybe you could shoot Jawas on a little land speeder.
That's the only
little noise.
That's one of few expanded universe novels that takes place in between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, which makes
sense. That's true.
But yeah, the Jedi Knight games were set like in the expanded universe where Han Solo and Leia are married and have kids and all this stuff.
Yep.
And Luke has his own Jedi Knight Academy and all this bizzo. And you had very complicated lightsaber mechanics. Like if you came at them at a slightly different angle, it would mean the difference between killing someone, you know, really easily. And this is just button mash, button mash, button mash, explosion of lightning. So, yeah. Kind of boring. I don't get next generation games, got to be honest.
That's not a great indicator of what the games are capable of doing these days. But the Star Wars MMORPG, massive multiplayer online role-playing game, based on I think it's the Knights of the Old Republic, is meant to be pretty awesome.
So you say.
But I'm not a big fan of role-playing games. I'd rather just,
I know.
People move on.
Peace-loving Christian Chris likes to run and shoot people, kill people in the airport. I'm always going to bring that one up because that one's...
Modern Warfare 2, yes.
Yeah, disgust me.
I just like a standard shooter. I don't want to play games for hours and hours and then unlock points so my character can get a different pair of shoes or something.
Or
get tattoos and I don't want to upgrade. I mean, yeah.
I don't mind. I don't mind upgrading certain powers and things.
If it's useful, yes.
If it's useful. Say if it's like, well, I don't use this attack, so I'm not going to upgrade it and waste my time. Like, that's cool. That's fine with me. But, too much of that stuff. Like, wow, you unlocked a new costume, which doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah, because you can't even see yourself because you're in the character's head. You're first person, so you can't let
turn
you
around, guy. Look this
mirror.
Way. Yeah. Or turn the guy to walk towards you so you can't see where you're fighting. Great. Very useful. It does have an unlockable Admiral Akbar costume.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you can play in the Admiral Akbar skin, which was cool for about 5 seconds until I got sick of that, because he doesn't do the voice. Guess what the code is to unlock the character?
It's a trap.
Close. It's a twap with a W for some reason.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah, but yeah. Admiral Akbar. See, that's what the prequel films needed.
Yeah.
Admiral Akbar. Instead of...
Admiral Akbar in the Family Guy was a goldfish.
I liked him on it. He was good on him, yeah.
American Dad, it was like his face was a goldfish in a goldfish bowl, and he was Admiral Akbar.
Actually, no, I was thinking of Robot Chicken, the Star Wars specials. They did great little Admiral Akbar skits there. There's a new one out, a new Robot Chicken Star Wars special.
Yeah, I've heard it's good. Didn't Admiral Akbar have his own breakfast cereal, one of the Robot Chicken ones?
Yeah. I've got to look up the quotes from it because it was hilarious. He just uses his... you can't repel flavor of this magnitude. And that's
right. Okay.
Yeah.
Classic. All right. I think we've babbled on long enough, haven't we?
I think so. Drawing to a close, my friend.
You're a babbling brook.
I think if we look back on this show, what did we discuss? We discussed Alan Moore. We discussed Star Wars Blu-rays.
Simpsons.
More than...
Watching sex scenes with your parents.
Sex scenes with your parents. And I kind of got sidetracked on Swamp Thing, but it's a good comic and you should get it.
I agree.
Yeah.
We can get all of our previous episodes at extrasequential.com, also on iTunes and Mixcloud. If you want to email me, it's chris@extrasequential.com. That's Chris with a K. My blog is comicbookjesus.com.
If you want to email me, it's chris@extrasequential.com. What a coincidence. And music for the show is purgeaudit.com. And... you can hear us ragging on Alan Moore and Jason Aaron next week. We kind of release these episodes randomly, so Thursdays, kind of, when they come out. Does that make sense?
Thursday, Fridays, every week.
We should lock that in.
Well, are we ready for that kind of commitment?
It took me this long to move in with my girlfriend, so yeah. Don't be expecting nothing from me, Chris. I don't see no ring on this finger.
I've got to start singing Beyonce. Thank you for listening. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us as much as we've enjoyed
listening to
us. Listen to us.
Hey, Chris, can I ask a question? Do you listen back to the shows?
Occasionally when I do, when I upload them onto my blog, I'll listen to them.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've listened to it on a couple of train visits, and I've laughed at what I have to say, but I figure that's quite okay.
So vain. No, I listen. Yes. I listen back as well. Like, I can't help it. I'm like, what do I sound like? And I don't like what I hear.
So you're like Woody Allen neurotic, and you just need to be confirmed that you sound vaguely human and confident.
I'm not going to try Woody Allen impersonation. Maybe next time.
I'm Woody Allen.
That's good.
Let's get out of here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Bye.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, whatever. Bye.